Welcome to the first SBL podcast. We are talking today about making the best use of your school business leader. We have Andy Heron from
the Marlow School.
We have Hayley from...
I'm Hayley Dunn from the Association of School and College Leaders.
Helen Burge from St Anne's Church Academy Primary School and the Priory Learning
Trust. And Emma Gray from Cotswold Beacon Academy Trust. We've been talking about doing a podcast for a long time and we've got people in the room, so we thought we would give it a go. So, Hayley, tell us about your recent article in making the best use of your school business manager and the impact it's had.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with the response. I was asked to do a piece for SecEd, focusing on business leaders and how they could be used most effectively by schools and the SLT. And it's really resonated with other professionals in terms of understanding the role of the SBL and how they can be almost deployed most effectively within the school and within the leadership team and the wider team. So for example, valuing their time, understanding what's included within their role and the demands on their time. And one of the most important things that I would say resonates is giving them a seat at the table. Too often we are still hearing that school business leaders don't have a place on the senior leadership team. And it's really vital that if they're going to be able to do a wide-reaching role that is strategic and operational, that they need to be part of those really important conversations.
Helen, you're a SRMA. Do you find the people you come across, there are a lot of people who aren't part of their SLT, and what impact does that have on the schools?
Yes, I think generally the schools that I visited, the SBLs haven't been on the SLT or haven't been on there for very long, so aren't actually having their voice heard, aren't being able to share the data, the metrics with the SLT, and therefore make that triangle of pedagogy, governance and leadership work as best it could.
And Andy, you often talk about things being different in Wales. Is this the sort of thing you're finding?
Not in most secondary schools in Wrexham. Quite fortunate that the school business managers are on the SLT. And they do have some influence over the SLT. I think where the difference lies is that in Wales, because it's not quite as at the forefront of school business leadership as England, the school business managers sometimes have the token seat round the table just to make sure that their school business manager is there on the conversation. And I think where the deficiency is that some school business managers, leaders, they're either lacking the experience to be able to have a meaningful impact on that conversation, so they can offer their professional opinion. Because in schools, everything, the way I see it, everything has a financial value. Absolutely everything, from premises, buying bins, to buying computers, to put in new equipment all over. And why wouldn't you have the person that controls that on the discussion group when you're making that decision?
So who's making the decision that the school business leader isn't on there? Is that coming from the head teacher, or is that a reluctance of the school business leader to push themselves forward?
I think it's probably case for both of those. I think historically, if a head teacher has never worked with a school business leader before, then they haven't realised the benefits to them, their own personal job, and to the wider school leadership team and to the wider school community. So that's one element. And the other bit is that school business leaders can tend to lack confidence. It's a very isolated role. So if everyone who they know who's a school business leader isn't on the SLT, they're not going to necessarily have any influence or understanding of how they can get onto the SLT or a driver. There isn't a driver for them to do it.
So is there a long-term negative impact to not having a school business leader on your SLT?
Well, I was going to say, you only have to look at Work Advocates, so Twitter's a great thing, but you only have to look at Twitter of late to see just how many financial irregularities are happening in schools at the moment. You know, shortfalls in budgets, black holes are being found with money going missing, whatever. And I just wonder if there's any correlation between when you're seeing these stories and what's happening in the school for control. Because, you know, you would expect that in most schools there'll be some financial regulation that's, you know, we all work to the book, as it were, follow the regulations, three quotes, etc. Where's all this money going to? And if in them schools there's not been a school business manager or school business leader overseeing what's being spent, is that going back to where the issue is? Because in these schools things are going missing because there's no one taking control, or is it someone taking control above the school business leader and making the wrong financial decisions that's opening up the school to funding problems? I just wonder if that's the case, and you know, can probably, as we move on, is more work going to be looking at that?
I think what we need to see within schools is schools and trusts using the Institute of School Business Leadership professional standards to understand whether they have the skills and competences and behaviours across a group of staff, that it doesn't necessarily sit with one individual, because it depends on the size of the school or the organisation as a whole. But are all those areas covered to a sufficient level for that organisation, be it a small one-form entry primary school up to the largest trusts? And it's essential that those professionals that are working within those areas not only keep themselves up to date with the latest in policy developments and statutory requirements, but are also upskilling themselves. One area that's a very hot topic at the moment is integrated curriculum-led financial planning, which is a perfect opportunity for school business leadership professionals to be working alongside teacher colleagues, particularly the timetabler and those tasked with responsibility for curriculum, to make sure that we are getting financial efficiency as far as we can within the constraints of the current funding situation as a whole, and with high needs and with sixth form funding, that we are getting the best with what we have. And then there's another conversation to be had that SBLs are using their voices to voice their concerns about the funding situation within education at the moment and how that is impacting.
And that sort of ability to use your voice comes with confidence. And in order to gain that confidence, you need to have things behind you, such as your DSBM type, CSBM, DSBM type qualifications, your ISBL, ISBL membership, your networking. You need to have all of these things in place in order to have the confidence, in order to be able to say, first of all, I need to be on the SLT, and second of all, I have a voice, I am an expert in this area, you need to hear what I'm saying.
And use the information that I've got to improve outcomes, because that's basically what we're all here for, is to improve the outcomes of the children. And if you're not having all the jigsaw pieces in front of you, how can you complete that jigsaw that is the best outcomes for those children? Because if you've got a head teacher that is missing out on some very valid information for whatever reason, how can they then make the best decision? It almost then is the opportunity for the carpet to be pulled out from underneath their feet, because all of a sudden they're into a negative financial situation. They haven't got a carry forward. They've overstaffed, or they've understaffed, and there's an impact then on the delivery of the curriculum. That should just be avoided at all costs, obviously.
Mm. So the question then has got to be, as schools convert to mats, however quickly or slowly or not that's going to happen, what is the future for the school business leader?
I think it is preparing yourself for the future and deciding where you want to see your role within that, and where you would like to be as a professional, whether you would like to continue as a generalist, and whether there is an opportunity for that within your current setting, whether you'd like to specialise in one particular area, for example, finance or HR or marketing, and to become significantly upskilled in that area, or even for the most ambitious, looking at the executive level jobs and how you might prepare yourself. And there are many ways that you can prepare yourself. It could come through professional training. For example, if you're interested in the executive level, then you may be interested in something like the MPQEL qualification. And then there are other routes as well, making sure that you are engaged within the profession, making sure you're engaged either through the Institute of School Business Leadership and or through organisations like ASCL, and making sure that you are ready for the changes. Particularly, there can be a significant change, from my experience, of finance within a maintained school compared to that of an academy school, because it is significantly different in terms of the reporting requirements and structure and frequency and the deadlines that you're working to. And that's something that you can do in advance so that you are ready and you are prepared, so that you don't become sidelined or seen as not having the skills to meet the challenges of the organisation going forward.
You do almost have to have a crystal ball, don't you?
You do.
About for yourself and for your organisation, and how you're going to prepare yourself to carry on working in that organisation if that's what you want, or to adapt and move somewhere else.
And making a different decision. And yeah. It depends where you want to take your career. You can either embrace whichever direction that you want, but that is your choice to make, and it's making an informed choice that meets your needs.
The only, obviously, with coming from Wales, working in a Welsh school, things are very different. So it was still very much the SBM, SBL generalist role is king. So there'll be someone there doing the main core activities that you know, a school business manager would do. I am a little bit fearful of that specialist avenue, in as much as I just wonder, and I can see why colleagues would feel particularly vulnerable to this, is if you've got a school where, and I'll try and give a scenario, if you've got a school that becomes a multi-academy trust, in practice, are we talking about instead of having one person doing that role in that particular school, you would have several people doing individual roles in HR, budgets, marketing, across the spectrum of the math. The problem I can see there is the fact that if you're then almost diluting the role in the math as such, are you not diluting the professionalism in terms of, you know, you're getting people that are just specialists in HR? How are the, and I know the ISBL are looking into it, how will they react to that? Because obviously if someone's only doing HR, but I appreciate on a bigger scale, but in terms of remuneration, is it going to be a backward step?
ISBL have actually got a grid of entrance levels and qualifications for HR, finance, school business managers, lots of different areas. So they've got all the specialisms and the generalisms and the generalist role on one document. It's actually really, it's quite a fascinating thing to look
okay.
at. So I'm not fearful of the generalist SBM role as we know it, disappearing and have nothing replacing it, because I think there will be something else to replace. If you think that 20 odd years ago there wasn't an SBM, they were called bursars, or a school didn't even have access to a bursar. So it's actually really quite an exciting time to be in this profession and to be evolving and to try to predict with our crystal balls what is going to be happening. And I think that ISBL is key to helping us work that out. I think we almost get hung up on the fact that you have to be an SBL to be in the Institute of School Business Leadership. And actually, school business leadership relates to finance managers, HR managers, estates managers, all sorts. It's not just the school business leader as we are currently understanding it. And I think I'm, as a leader of a local school business leader regional group, I'm trying to appeal to all those specialists as well as the generalists, because I think that one particular mat could opt one way, and as you described, and another adopt a completely different staffing structure. And so we, as bigger organisations, need to be able to adapt to both sets of needs.
Sorry,
I was going to say, I think where people become more vulnerable is if they don't keep up to date in some way. I think that's how you become vulnerable. So I would say that's the most important thing, is keeping up to date with what is happening and upskilling, and making that decision for yourself about what direction. Because I think there is the scope for every type of different role to keep those roles there for practitioners who want, who don't want to go down a specific type of route. So those roles are, we've got a very diverse landscape now within the education sector. So there is something there for everybody. You just have to be decisive about what it is that you would like to, what would you like to go for.
So to take us back to the original question, the original topic, what would you say then to a head teacher who maintains that they don't need their school business leader on their leadership team? I think I would say to them, you need to look at your school business manager, your school business leader, and ask yourself as a head teacher why they're not on the leadership team. Is it a personality thing? Is it a training thing? Is it just that you don't talk about finance in the school leadership team? Which begs the question, why not? What would you say?
I would ask the head teacher, how are they getting that information then? How are they sharing that information? How are they discussing the impact that a change in funding can have on the school? You know, if they're not, you know, from an HR side, if they're not planning for the future in terms of staffing or retire, you know, someone's going to be retiring and that discussion's not happening. Well, if it's not happening at SLT, where is it happening? And how are they ensuring that they're getting the right information at the right time to make those the best decision they can make? And it would be quite interesting to know how they're getting that information, because I can't see it. I think there's also another thing, and that is about how the information is shared with governors. So we've talked about the business manager being on the SLT. I would have expect the business manager to also be reporting to governing bodies or academy councils about the finances. So it seems weird that it's not being discussed at SLT level and yet is going to the next level. And I would have thought that the head teacher might, or and other members of the SLT, might like to have some familiarity with the topic before it gets to a governor's meeting. So I think that's another benefit to having an SBM on your SLT, is to not have any surprises when you get to a governor's meeting.
Mm. See, it goes back a bit further than that as well. Is when you think about school business managers, what their original role was in the school was the fact they'd been identified that their head teachers weren't able to get everything done. And a school business manager was ideally placed to be that person that could alleviate some elements of their teacher's role, so they could concentrate on teaching and learning, which in the school where I work is predominantly how it works. Anything teaching and learning is their teacher's responsibility. Everything else is mine. So when you have that SLT meeting, which don't forget should be strategic, it will have operational elements to it. But when to be able to have all the information to hand, like Helen said, and to be able to make the correct decision, or to make, you know, a valid decision or on which way to go, is without that information at the meeting, it becomes flawed. How can you make a decision based on not having all the right facts? That's what I would say.
Well, I think thank you very much to everybody who's taken part in this podcast. I hope you found it useful. Please do let us know what you think and whether you'd like any more and what subjects you'd like us to discuss. Thank you very much, Andy, Hayley, Helen, and thank you for listening.